I arranged to divide the night watches with Worsley and Wilde, and none of us had much rest. The ship was shaken by heavy bumps, and we were on the alert to see that no dogs had fallen into cracks. The morning light showed that our island had been reduced considerably during the night. Our long months of rest and safety seemed to be at an end, and a period of stress had begun. During the following day, I had a store of sledging provisions, oil, matches, and other essentials placed on the upper deck, handy to the starboard quarter boat, so as to be in readiness for a sudden emergency. The ice was grinding and working steadily to the southward, and in the evening some large cracks appeared on the port quarter, while a crack alongside opened out to 15 yards. The blizzard seemed to have set the ice in strong movement towards the north, and the southwesterly and west-southwesterly winds that prevailed 2 days out of three maintained the drift. I hoped that this would continue unchecked, since our chance of getting clear of the pack early in the spring appeared to depend upon our making a good northing. Soundings at this time gave depths of from 186 to 190 fathoms, with a glacial mud bottom. No land was in sight. The light was improving. A great deal of ice pressure was heard and observed in all directions during the 25th, much of it close to the port quarter of the ship. On the starboard bow, huge blocks of ice, weighing many tons and 5 feet in thickness, were pushed up on the old floe to a height of 15 to 20 feet. The floe that held the Endurance was swung to and fro by the pressure during the day, but came back to the old bearing before midnight. The ice for miles around is much looser. There are numerous cracks and short leads to the northeast and southeast. Ridges are being forced up in all directions, and there is a water sky to the southeast. It would be a relief to be able to make some effort on our own behalf, but we can do nothing until the ice releases our ship. If the floes continue to loosen, we may break out within the next few weeks and resume the fight. In the meantime, the pressure continues, and it is hard to foresee the outcome. Just before noon today, July 26th, the top of the sun appeared by refraction for 1 minute, 79 days after our last sunset. A few minutes earlier, a small patch of the sun had been thrown up on one of the black streaks above the horizon. All hands are cheered by the indication that the end of the winter darkness is near. Clark finds that with returning daylight, the diatoms are again appearing. His nets and line are stained a pale yellow, and much of the newly formed ice has also a faint brown or yellow tinge. The diatoms cannot multiply without light, and the ice formed since February can be distinguished in the pressure ridges by its clear blue colour. The older masses of ice are of a dark, earthy brown, dull yellow, or reddish brown. The breakup of our floe came suddenly on Sunday, August 1st, just 1 year after the Endurance left the Southwest India docks on the voyage to the far south. The position was latitude 72 degrees 26 minutes south, longitude 48 degrees 10 minutes west. The morning brought a moderate southwesterly gale with heavy snow, and at 8 a.m., after some warning movements of the ice, the floe cracked 40 yards off the starboard bow. 2 hours later, the floe began to break up all around us under pressure, and the ship listed over 10 degrees to starboard. I had the dogs and sledges brought aboard at once, and the gangway hoisted. The animals behaved well. They came aboard eagerly, as though realizing their danger, and were placed in their quarters on deck without a single fight occurring. The pressure was cracking the floe rapidly, rafting it close to the ship, and forcing masses of ice beneath the keel. Presently the Endurance listed heavily to port against the gale, and at the same time was forced ahead, astern, and sideways several times by the grinding floes. She received one or two hard nips, but resisted them without as much as a creak. It looked at one stage as if the ship was to be made the plaything of successive floes, and I was relieved when she came to a standstill with a large piece of our old dock under the starboard bilge. I had the boats cleared away ready for lowering, got up some additional stores, and set a double watch. All hands were warned to stand by, get what sleep they could, and have their warmest clothing at hand. Around us lay the ruins of Dogtown, amid the debris of pressure ridges. Some of the little dwellings had been crushed flat beneath blocks of ice. Others had been swallowed and pulverized when the ice opened beneath them and closed again. It was a sad sight, but my chief concern just then was the safety of the rudder, which was being attacked viciously by the ice. We managed to pole away a large lump that had become jammed between the rudder and the sternpost, but I could see that damage had been done, though a close examination was not possible that day. After the ship had come to a standstill in her new position, very heavy pressure was set up. Some of the trenails were started and beams buckled slightly under the terrific stresses. But the Endurance had been built to withstand the attacks of the ice, and she lifted bravely as the floes drove beneath her. The effects of the pressure around us were awe-inspiring. Mighty blocks of ice gripped between meeting floes rose slowly till they jumped like cherry stones squeezed between thumb and finger. The pressure of millions of tons of moving ice was crushing and smashing inexorably. If the ship was once gripped firmly, her fate would be sealed. The gale from the southwest blew all night and moderated during the afternoon of the second to a stiff breeze. The pressure had almost ceased. Apparently the gale had driven the southern pack down upon us, causing congestion in our area. The pressure had stopped when the whole of the pack got into motion. The gale had given us some northing, but it had dealt the Endurance what might prove to be a severe blow. The rudder had been driven hard over to starboard, and the blade partially torn away from the rudder head. Heavy masses of ice were still jammed against the stern, and it was impossible to ascertain the extent of the damage at that time. I felt that it would be impossible in any case to effect repairs in the moving pack. The ship lay steady all night, and the sole sign of continuing pressure was an occasional slight rumbling shock. We rigged shelters and kennels for the dogs inboard. The weather on August 3rd was overcast and misty. We had 9 hours of twilight, with good light at noon. There was no land in sight for 10 miles from the masthead. The pack, as far as the eye could reach, was in a condition of chaos, much rafted and consolidated, with very large pressure ridges in all directions. At 9 p.m., a rough altitude of Canopus gave the latitude as 71 degrees 55 minutes 17 seconds south. The drift, therefore, had been about 37 miles to the north in 3 days. 4 of the poorest dogs were shot this day. They were suffering severely from worms, and we could not afford to keep sick dogs under the changed conditions. The sun showed through the clouds on the northern horizon for about an hour on the 4th. There was no open water to be seen from aloft in any direction. We saw from the masthead to west-southwest an appearance of barrier, land, or a very long iceberg about 20-odd miles away, but the horizon clouded over before we could determine its nature. We tried twice to make a sounding that day, but failed on each occasion. The Kelvin machine gave no bottom at the full length of the line, 370 fathoms. After much labour, we made a hole in the ice near the sternpost, large enough for the Lucas machine with a 32-pound lead. But this appeared to be too light. The machine stopped at 452 fathoms, leaving us in doubt as to whether bottom had been reached. Then, in heaving up, we lost the lead, the thin wire cutting its way into the ice and snapping. All hands and the carpenter were busy this day making and placing kennels on the upper deck, and by nightfall all the dogs were comfortably housed, ready for any weather. The sun showed through the clouds above the northern horizon for nearly an hour. The remaining days of August were comparatively uneventful. The ice around the ship froze firm again, and little movement occurred in our neighbourhood. The training of the dogs, including the puppies, proceeded actively and provided exercise as well as occupation. The drift to the northwest continued steadily. We had bad luck with soundings, the weather interfering at times and the gear breaking on several occasions. But a big increase in the depth showed that we had passed over the edge of the Weddell Sea Plateau. A sounding of about 1,700 fathoms on August 10th agreed fairly well with Filchner's 1,924 fathoms, 130 miles east of our then position. An observation at noon of the 8th had given us latitude 71 degrees 23 minutes south, longitude 49 degrees 13 minutes west. Minus temperatures prevailed still, but the daylight was increasing. We captured a few emperor penguins which were making their way to the southwest. 10 penguins taken on the 19th were all in poor condition, and their stomachs contained nothing but stones and a few cuttlefish beaks. A sounding on the 17th gave 1,676 fathoms, 10 miles west of the charted position of Morell Land. No land could be seen from the masthead, and I decided that Morell Land must be added to the long list of Antarctic islands and continental coasts that, on close investigation, have resolved themselves into icebergs. On clear days we could get an extended view in all directions from the masthead, and the line of the pack was broken only by familiar bergs. About 100 bergs were in view on a fine day, and they seemed practically the same as when they started their drift with us nearly 7 months earlier.